Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
From the Society for Nautical Research, in partnership with Lloyd's Register Foundation, I'm Sam Willis, and this is the Mariner's Mirror podcast, the world's number one podcast dedicated to all of maritime history.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mariner's Mirror podcast. Today, we continue our mini-series on maritime Australia. To go alongside this, we've made some really fun animated video content. You can find them all at the Mariner's Mirror podcast YouTube page and on our Instagram and also TikTok. So please make sure to check all of those out. You will be amazed, I promise you. So far in our Australia series, we've been to Perth for the first few episodes, and now we're in Brisbane at the Queensland Maritime Museum. The last episode was a short tour of the museum building and its many and wonderful objects and artefacts. And today I'm taking you on a tour. We're outside, we're at the dry dock. That sits nestled into a bend on the south bank of the Brisbane River. To find out more, I spoke with Russell Cobine, a volunteer shipwright at the museum. As ever, I hope you enjoy listening to him as much as I enjoyed talking with him. Here is the expertly experienced man with expertise oozing from his pores. He's the shipwrightiest man I've ever met. He's also good value and great company. Here is Russell. So I'm standing here on the decks of a World War II frigate looking out at a majestic river, and I'm in the middle of Brisbane and I'm here with Russell. Where are we?
We are at South Brisbane Dry Dock in Brisbane, which was established prior to World War I and it was in operation as a dry dock through till about 1980, when the Maritime Museum was formed, and they now control the dry dock as it is today.
Yeah. It seems to be quite an amazing engineering achievement, looking at the way that the dry docks formed. What do we know about how they built it?
Well, I don't know a great deal about how they built it, mainly because I wasn't here, but, but when you look at the structure, I believe that it's very much a great deal of limestone.
Yep.
And it has been formed this way, and when we go up towards the front of the dry dock, you'll see the actual stone where they've extended the length of it and taken, and you can see the stone formation. The idea of the steps is that they were used in part of the procedures when docking certain types of vessels.
Right.
If you have a vessel that has a fair amount of shape in the frames, where it rises quickly, you use. Well, they were Oregon posts that we used to wedge between there and the deck of the boat to hold it up. And it was one every 2 or 3 metres apart for the length of the boat. If the boat was flat bottom, like a dredge or something like that, well, then we used to build what we called a cradle to sit it in, which was a series of blocks set at specific heights. Boat came in and sat on it.
And what's your own experience of the dry dock? Because you said you were here once many, many years ago.
I actually served my apprenticeship here at the dry dock in 1962. I commenced as a shipwright apprentice. I served and worked in many of the aspects of the shipbuilding here, mainly in repair and in maintenance, assisting with docking, etc., learning my way around the shipyard. It's interesting to note that my grandfather actually worked here in the dry dock during the war as what they called in those days a diluty shipwright. Mm-hmm. He was not qualified, but he knew how to do the job. And he was the one that said to me, the best job I ever had was a shipwright. I think you should do that. So being the eldest grandson, I did as I was told.
Fantastic. So you know your way around this place.
Pretty well.
So, yeah. I mean, we're standing on the decks in the middle of the dry dock now, looking across onto the side of it. And there's plenty of equipment here as well, some really interesting material. Are these warehouses as well, are they part of the original site?
They are part of the original site. The concrete structure you can see here is actually the pump house, and you can go down in there and see the way the pumps operated, and that's very interesting. This area over here may have been moved, but there used to be a loft for the mould maker there. That was his little area. And then from here out alongside there to the left used to be the boilermaker's shop, because the dry dock, when it was owned by Harbours Marine, was self-sufficient in its own right. We had painters and dockers, who everybody knows what one of them are, yeah. Painters and dockers, shipwrights, and the shipwrights that were here were also highly skilled in boat building. Many of them came from England, migrated over here and worked in here. And so that's it. And then over on this side where the museum is now, there used to be a very large blacksmith shop. Next door to that was a fitting and turning workshop where they could they had machines there that could turn a prop shaft if it needed to be. Then alongside that was the shipwright's workshop, where there used to be 12 shipwrights here in the dry dock, as well as, I think, well, there was only two apprentices when I started. When I finished, I think we had about 6 shipwright apprentices.
Yeah.
Along the riverfront was wharves. Well, we'll call them wharves, but they were pretty rickety, but there were wharves, and that's where we used to tie up the boats for maintenance work outside the dry dock itself.
Yeah, and they've all gone now. I mean, the riverside is, there are walkways for people to walk along, but there's not really places for people to tie up large amounts of ships, are there?
No, there isn't. Basically, along here used to be all wharves, etc., but with the implementation of the freeway, they limited the size of boats that could come up here, and that's one of the reasons the dry dock closed.
Yeah.
But also, this was the centre of Brisbane, so along Grey Street here was well known for the wharves and the equipment, etc., and the people that, our goods came into here and then were moved from there.
What sort of goods are we talking about?
Oh, you'd be talking about any household goods, material, building materials, construction materials, wheat, flour, wool.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those things would have been dispatched from here as well, because Queensland is known for wheat and wool and, timber, etc. So, it was our main receiving point for Queensland and a distribution point.
It's interesting now, as we stand on the decks looking out of the gate of the dry dock, there are two bridges which effectively seal off this majestic river. So I suppose back in the day we used to have imagined a huge forest of masts here rather than some busy motorway roads.
Well, not while I was here, because the distance from the mouth of the river to here made it somewhat difficult for people to want to leave their boat here over the weekend, or to go out weekend sailing, because I can't remember travelling it, but it's a couple of hours, 2 or 3 hours to get down before you got out into the ocean blue to go sailing. So it was more commercial. Over the other side, there used to be, they were all government buildings, The QUT was a technical college for trades, etc. Behind there, of course, is the Botanic Gardens, which has been there since I was a kid. So. Yeah.
Had a good look around the Botanic Gardens yesterday. It was fantastic. The an important part of Brisbane's recent history were these terrible floods you had last year. How did this cope with the floods?
When the floods last year, we actually had the water came in, the river rose, and a lot of water came down the sides of the hills there, and it did engulf the dry dock, and the water rose to a point where the Diamantina was just tithering on whether it was going to be floating or sitting on the blocks underneath. So there was quite an anxious time for everybody to, because of the way it's set up, you've got to hold its position.
Let me just put this in context. So we're standing on the decks of a Second World War frigate, the Diamantina, and she's obviously exists in this dry dock, and the concern is there was so much water in the dry dock that she'd start floating. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. Well, she's right on the edge of floating. In the 1970, one of the previous ones, she actually did float, and she was floating up above the wall there. Yeah. So that's one of the challenges that we face here, when flood comes, and they seem to be a lot more regular these days.
You've got a historic vessel in a dry dock, but which might need to float at any unspecified time. That's tricky to manage, isn't it?
Well, that's correct, yes. That's the reality, because it's just not a simple process of getting the boat out of the dry dock these days, because the old cassoon, which is the plug which holds the water out, it's been replaced, and it wasn't built as it was originally because it was like a small boat, right? It used to float, and you'd sink it to seal off the water, because the water level out there is higher than in here, so we've got to block it. So they've built this new structure, which is not independent of the dry dock itself. As you can see, there's got a number of metal straps, etc., on both sides, which are adding extra support, whereas before it was a self-floating vessel that it had water ballast in it. So what would happen is that when the water, when the dock was prepared, the water would be allowed to come into the dry dock, and while it was running until such time as the water on the outside was equivalent to the inside, and then we would pump the ballast out of the cassoon, which would allow it to pop, and then it would be manually handled sort of over here to over against this wall here.
Like a lock gate?
Like a lock gate, yeah, but it didn't lay down, it actually floated away, and then when the boat was in the dry dock, the cassoon was put back in its place, right, and sunk so that, filled with water, so that it locked into place, and then that allowed the water here to be pumped out at a regulated level so it could be the boat could be lowered onto the cradle or the shores put in as required.
So how far below water level is the bottom of this dry dock as we look at it now?
You got me caught there now.
No idea.
It's probably about, depending on the tide, but 12 to 15 feet, I would imagine, below the initial level.
Yeah.
Now, from what I can remember, I actually did go down to the bottom of the dock on the outside there on one occasion, and it was about that, about 12 to 15 feet.
A wonderful engineering achievement. Now, let's nose around the dock a bit more, shall we?
Yeah. If we go down here, we can actually walk down into the dock.
Oh, let's do that. Walking into the dock. Sounds fun. Best way to get a good view of it.
Yeah. Well, you'll see the process. Well, the process in our day was a lot different to the...
It reminds me of the historic dock in Barrow in Furness, where I was recently. The Dockyard Museum is built over that historic dock. Probably of a similar period, actually.
It's probably designed from there. I don't know much about the designers and such like, but I think one of the amazing things that I find is that if you were to run around the volunteers here, you probably wouldn't find very many people qualified as shipwrights that serve their apprenticeship here at the dry dock.
So we climb down to the bottom of the dock here. Let's go around this way. So there are some old marker buoys here.
Yes.
Black and white one, red and white one, huge green one.
Yes, they've all got been used or donated to the Maritime Museum, another bigger one right up at the bow.
Yeah. It's a very busy place. There's all sorts of work going on maintaining. There are a number of historic vessels here. So we're just passing one, which I believe was used for collecting pearls. And another one here is a yacht. Ah, this is the one that was...
Jessica Watson.
Jessica Watson, that's right. And tell me about her.
Well, Jessica Watson was a young lady about 16 years of age, I think she was, when she circumnavigated the world. Is that right? Circumnavigated the world in this boat single-handed.
Wow. 16 years old?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, Jessica Watson's her name, and she's well-known for for that achievement.
Yeah, fascinating. Lovely looking yacht painted in pink. Right, let's go down the dry dock.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm just moving some wheels out the way. There's some wires we've got to step over. It's still a very busy working yard.
The boys are just doing a little bit of maintenance to the Pink Lady.
Pink Lady, that's the yacht we were just talking about.
Yeah, because we understand there will be a reception with Jessica Watson next week
here. Really?
At the museum.
Ooh. I think we should get Jessica Watson on the podcast, have a nice chat with her about her experiences. Okay, so we're on some stairs now, walking down to the bottom of the dry dock.
I think if I remember correctly, there's 110 stairs in the old stairs from the top of the dock to the bottom. As an apprentice, it was always great fun when you were setting up a cradle. If there was a box of nails needed or something else needed, guess who was the person that had to navigate these 10 steps?
Yeah, we're probably asked to go and collect things like sky hooks as well, tools that don't exist.
Yeah, sky hooks. Or the classic one here was they'd send you down to the store for a long wait.
Oh, yeah. And then you're staying at the store for some time.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So
we're now on the floor of the dry dock, and you can see the basic principle here of how it operated. You've got to bear in mind that back in the 1960s, we didn't have concrete structures such as this.
Yeah, so I should say that this enormous Second World War frigate is standing on top of, I don't know, 100 concrete blocks. But before it would have been resting on timber.
Timber blocks, yeah, they were blocks. There was at least one every every metre, they were fastened down onto these pieces of timber. So every 1,200, roughly, there's a piece of timber which has been moulded into the hull, and that's where you would fasten the wooden blocks. And what they are basically equated to that you used to have, if I can use 1962 language,
a
12-inch by 12-inch hardwood block, possibly about 4 foot long.
Yeah.
That would sit on the base, and then you would have a couple of smaller ones, maybe 6 inches, 4 inches. They come in varied sizes because you had to have different heights.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would have a couple of hardwood wedges, which were about 3 foot long, and they went from 4 inches to 8 inches.
Yep.
And they'd sit on top of each other, which allowed you to adjust. Then on top of that, you would have a line of packing, and then you'd have another small blocks, and then on the top was a piece of pine, which is usually about 18 inches wide by 3 foot long by about 4 inches thick. That was to take the compression.
Yeah.
The idea of having the different, the structure like that was that there were the occasions where you were required to remove a block.
Yeah.
To do repair to the hull or whatever. So what that would entail then is that you'd pull the battens off that were tying it all together, and then you'd get 8 shipwrights down on the job, and we had a ram, the old ram days.
This sounds incredibly dangerous.
Around about 6x4, all right, with ropes through it every so often, with a steel band on the end. And the leading hand would get there, and it'd be, you'd swing it back and forth and hit the block.
Wow. And cross your fingers.
Cross your fingers.
So the ship doesn't land on your head.
Well, there was a block every 1,200. But if that wasn't sufficient to remove to take the pressure off the lock, the job then was to split out the piece of pine on top.
Yeah.
And I can tell you some stories about that. Because basically, to split it out, we had like big splitting chisels, which were about 2 foot long and about 2 inches in diameter, and they had a point on the end of them. And the concept was that somebody held the chisel where it had to be hit, and the mate behind you swung a 7-pound hammer and hit the end of the thing, and we split the material out. And we talked about long waits, etc. But also, there were always lots of shenanigans that went on.
Yeah.
And you've got to realise that the people that I served my apprenticeship, they were very seasoned tradesmen. They'd been involved in this for 15 and 20 years. They were the same team. They all knew what they had to do. And you as an apprentice, of course, would always land the good job. You'd be holding on it. And then every so often we used to use what was called mauls. And that was a 7-pound hammer that had a normal hammerhead on one end, but had a pointed end on the other end.
Yeah.
And you'd be standing there concentrating, and the bloke and then somebody'd say, after the bang, "Did you use the right end, Tom?" And you'd look around, and here he's got the pointed piece, and he's, which has got a hull diameter of about 1/2 inch, driving this. But really and truly, they were so good at it that they could do it, Another thing you used to do, if you want a bit of difference, is we used to have nail driving competition.
Right, okay, wow.
Well,
wherever, with some of those going upwards.
Usually it was going downwards.
All right.
Because, see, each block had to be tied together.
Yep.
So it was tied together with a piece of 4x2 hardwood.
Yep.
All right, and it'd be nailed off. And they were also tied, as the blocks went up, they all had to be tied together. So there were 4 battens on each block, which went from the top to the bottom. And then you had these longitudinal ones, because timber's got a bad habit of floating. So when the water, before the boat went on it, you had to make sure it was secure. You'd have to prop the end as well so that when the keel came down and the pressure went back, that there was something to stop it from tumbling over. So it was not unusual for us, you know, as day went on, and if you spent 8 hours down here levelling blocks and putting them in place and nailing them off, you all tend to get a little, you know, need a bit of relaxation. So they line the nails up and say, how well can you drive 4-inch nail through that timber there?
Yeah.
The tradesman could do it in 1.5 strikes of a hammer.
No way, that's unbelievable.
Yep. No, they just had that knack of the flick of the wrist.
The timing and the...
The timing and everything, that they just banged straight through.
Amazing.
The timber was almost like pine because it was pretty wet, but still pretty miraculous.
Yeah. How many hits would it take me, do you reckon?
Well, depends how many times you miss.
That's very true. Very good. Tell me about, I don't know, health and safety down here. Was it, I mean...
Health and who?
Health and safety, yeah. What happened there? Was there anyone looking out for you? Did you feel that there was supervisors keeping an eye on what was going on?
Now, being having spent the last 6 years before I retired as a health and safety officer, I'm just about ready to damn myself.
Interesting, I'll go for it.
No, there was no health and safety. We used to have a first aid officer, you know, but apart from that, there was no inductions, no training, you know. Common sense was prevailed and, you know, I guess we all knew our limitations and, well, I think in my history there that we only ever had, we had one serious accident in the 5 years I was here, and that was on a circular saw, made a bit of a mess of the guy, but his arm. But normally, most things, you know, we did have a. We this. You can cut the bits out you don't want.
Tell me the story.
We did have an apprentice that had been in a car accident, and he had a wooden leg.
Right.
And the foot of his wooden leg was bolted with a stainless steel bolt. And I can still remember the day he was working on the deck. They were removing some of the malthoid on the deck with scrapers, and the bolt on his foot broke. And I'm on the other side, and they said, "Hey, Russ, can you go and get the first aid officer? Because, I forget his name, let's say, Merv's foot just fell off." I didn't know. I knew he had a wooden leg, but I didn't know his foot was how it's connected. And he goes, holds his shoe up. I was sent up to get his car, brought him back. He went, come back 4 hours later. They put a new bolt in his wooden leg. But he was able to work. He worked alongside us. And but I still remember, you know, and I'm talking 60 years ago, still vividly remember, you know, this guy. My foot fell off.
It's a wonderful story. I tell you what, though, I'm pretty pleased I've got 2 feet. Being a bit topply would not be good here.
No. Well, unfortunately, safety was never something which was promoted to the level it is today. And I do believe that there are some people today that they take it to the other extreme. I think some of the best safety officers I've worked with, and what I tried to put my spin on it, was that were people who had actually done the job and then moved on to that position.
Yeah.
They understood some of the tolerances and, you know, some of the things, you know, that you could get away with, if you like, for the sake of a better terminology. But, you know, the effects of the lack of safety domination is very relevant even in myself today. All right, if you look closely, you'll see that I wear glasses. That's because I had one too many welding flashes.
Right.
I wear hearing aids. I wonder why. Because one of the days, in those days, they used to clean the outside of a boat with rust with rattle guns.
Right, wow. I don't know what a rattle gun is.
Well, a rattle gun is an air compressor with a hammer that goes at rapid speed against the metal hull.
Yeah.
But you'd be inside the boat working, and there'd be 20 or 30 blokes outside rattling.
Oh my goodness me.
You know? So therefore, you suffer from industrial deafness.
Yeah.
And I think one of the other interesting things about the shipbuilding industry is that, just as I say to people these days when I'm talking to them, if you're going to build a boat, don't bring your square, because nothing's square. Nothing's really level. You're on a boat. It's all got curves, shapes, etc. So you've got to learn how to do it without these modern conveniences. And also, have you ever tried to stand up in a small boat? It's practically impossible, and you've got one leg up here and you've got another leg there, and he says, can you just move that engine bed another 3 inches this way? And that's a piece of 12x12, you know, 6-7 foot long.
Yeah.
So therefore, you'll find most people that worked in this trade have got back, they can't see and they can't hear.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing you're still here, Russ. Well done. Well, listen, thank you very much indeed for this little tour. I really appreciated it.
Okay, thank you very much. And we always like to share our industry, you know, sort of. I know my grandson thinks nothing better if his grandmother says, I'll go and pick granddad up from the boat. He's down and he's all over it.
Yeah.
And his last time he said, I want to go down the dry dock. I said, you can't, it's closed. Surely you can take me down, Pa. And he run around here and just thoroughly enjoyed. When he went home, he said to his mother, I'm going to build boats like Pa.
Hey, good lad.
Good lad.
Good lad. Well, I wish him all the best. And it's really reminding of how hugely inspirational it is being in the bottom of a dry dock, because you've got this enormous vessel above you. You've got these remarkable stepped sides, the curves, the stairs. And, I mean, it just makes you wonder how on earth they built it, why on earth they built it, and the majestic history of the entire place. So very kind of you to bring me down.
Thank you.
Now, my turn to ask of you a favour. If you're listening on iTunes, please leave us a review. If you do so, I promise I'll read it out. It helps a huge deal, as the more reviews we get, the easier it is for people to find us, and therefore the more we can teach people about our maritime past. Don't forget that this podcast comes from both the Society for Nautical Research and the Lloyd's Register Foundation, and please check out what both of those institutions are up to. You can find the History and Education Centre of the Lloyd's Register Foundation at hec.lrfoundation.org.uk, and make sure to check out their latest project, Maritime Innovation in Miniature. Just Google it, Maritime Innovation in Miniature. You'll find videos of the world's greatest ship models filmed with the very latest camera equipment. There's some fabulous more material on its way soon. Got a little trip to the Maritime Museum in Stockholm and their extraordinary collection of ship models coming up. The Society for Nautical Research, you can find at snr.org.uk, and that is where you go to join up. It's a brilliant way to meet people and to find out all about the maritime past from the very best in the business. And if you're a full member, you get to come to our annual dinner on board HMS Victory, or this year HMS Warrior, and that is something you will never, ever forget.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues. your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.